to the Kanji Cast, the podcast that you never made a deal with. We're also the show that didn't make the castle run in 12 parsecs, even if you round down, but we do provide an Asian perspective into the galaxy far, far away. I'm your host, Bria, and with me are my co-hosts, Brian and Jay.
Hello.
Hello.
On today's episode, we're talking about Barazophi, so sit back and enjoy the Kanji Cast. And shockingly, I pulled myself away from Battlefront 2 to do this podcast, which took some serious effort.
You had a Grievous crawl away, didn't you?
He skitters and he coughs.
Wow.
I hope he has a spinny bike thing.
Oh, he has one of his moves lets you do the you know, with the four lightsabers where either you spin and you just walk forward into people.
So
you windmill at them.
You're essentially playing as a wood chipper.
If you do the special move, yes. I think it's the center move, but yes, it's so good.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I've been playing since I got home, basically, and I'm just happy.
You sound kind of punch drunk.
You know, some people get drunk on alcohol. I just get drunk on General Grievous being introduced into a game and having ridiculous lines and moves and being oh so good.
Oh, the developers had fun with that one, I'm guessing.
Yeah. But oh, yeah, anyways. Did they, though? Did they expect this particular reaction? Probably not. I think I've scared everyone on Twitter at this point. Anyways, so let's kick it off with our news segment. And then there's this. Jay, you had something for us this week, right?
Yeah, so this is actually a follow-up to a previous segment where we talked about the controversy with the Simpsons character Apu and how they were sort of tone-deaf in addressing the racial stereotyping discussion. Well, in response to that, they've decided to just write him out of the show because I guess it's too hard to fix any issues, so let's just get rid of him completely.
I mean, they're not even writing him out. They're just stopping using him at all.
Oh, good. Even better.
I'm so torn on that. Because on the one hand, not great, Bob. On the other hand, did we really expect them to do better?
I mean, they could have just canceled the whole show. That would have been better for everyone.
That's true. Okay, valid point.
Well, I mean, at one point, The Simpsons was pretty cutting edge satirical comedy, and they had a writer's room of people who knew how to punch up, but somehow they lost their way.
Isn't that show as old as I am, basically?
Older.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. One day, guys, one day we'll have a, and then there's this, and there won't be anything bad. I believe in us. In the world. That's a lie.
I believe in your optimism.
I have no optimism. Only joy for General Grievous.
Lines I never thought we'd utter on this show.
No, this is really just a shocking, shocking afternoon for all of us. And also, there was something else I was going to add, but I forgot what it was. I thought of it when Jay was saying his thing. I feel like something else kind of happened. But I can't remember what now. Oh, I know what it was. You probably already know this if you're listening to this podcast, but Woman of the Galaxy by Amy Ratcliffe came out today. And it features a whole bunch of it's 75 character profiles of female characters in the galaxy. And it has art by 18 female and non-binary artists, of which a whole bunch of them are Asian. So go check out the book. It's awesome. It's beautiful. It's delightful. And you're also supporting awesome Asians in the Star Wars universe.
Yes, I've got my copy sitting out in the living room, and I'm going to be tearing into it as soon as we're done here tonight.
Yeah, I third all that. I can't give it a stronger recommendation. It's wonderful. It's great for all sorts of Star Wars fans, young and old, new and veteran, and it'll teach you all about some great characters and show you some great art by great people.
Yes, indeed. See, we had something good. There we go. There's balance in the force.
Hooray.
All right, shall we dive into our what is undoubtedly going to be a very cathartic discussion and bring me down from my grievous high?
I feel like this is going to be more cathartic for you.
Yeah. Okay, so we said last month that we're going to talk about Barriss. And some of you might have been a little confused as to why we said that, because in the movies and in the TV shows, she's an alien character. However, and I'm sure I'm about to butcher her name, but that's pretty much standard for me when it comes to names. Nalini Krishan? Did I get that? Am I close, Jay?
It might be Krishan. I'm not sure.
Krishan. Okay. Nalini Krishan. She is a Fiji-born Australian actress. Wow, I typed actress there. Thank you, autocorrect. With Indian and Nepalese heritage. So I'm going to count her for the purposes of this podcast, and also because it gives us an excuse to go into a slightly bigger issue that Star Wars has a problem with sometimes. Because even though she's played by a woman of color, and Luminara Unduli, her master, is also played by a woman of color, I believe that actress's heritage is African. But don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. They're aliens in canon. And I can never pronounce this right. Miri Allens?
I think that's right.
Yes! I'm on a roll. They're near human aliens with light yellow or green skin, and they have facial tattoos that are in the shape of diamonds usually, or at least in Attack of the Clones they did. So, you guys know where I'm going with this.
Yeah. Star Wars, you have a bit of a problem here.
Yeah. I know that personally, so I costume as Barriss, and people will ask me why I don't change my skin tone, to which I kind of just look at them and say, I really don't feel comfortable turning my skin a shade of yellow. And sometimes they still don't get it.
And then we have to hold their hands a little more and explain the kind of gross undertones there.
Yeah. But of course, it's not only the Miri Allens that Star Wars has done this to. And to be fair, I think this is more of a problem that we saw in the prequel trilogy and before we slipped into the new canon, where we would see these really cool, and it would usually be women of color. It wouldn't so much be the men of color, but it would be women of color like Barriss and Luminara, and then Jedi Masters like Adi Gallia, who would their characters would be aliens. They wouldn't be human.
There's a weird story behind Adi Gallia too, because I think when The Phantom Menace came out, like a visual dictionary or some EU product said that she was a human from Corellia, and that was nice. And then in Attack of the Clones, the original actress wasn't available, and so they hired someone else, and she played the character Stas Ali, who looks similar to Adi Gallia. And then they decided, oh, well, instead of them being the same character, we'll just say that they're an alien species that has head tentacles now. And so they retcon them into aliens when they had previously been just humans of color.
Yeah. And aren't they like changed into like seed pod headdresses now or something?
Yeah, I think they're going back the other way. They're still called the Lothans, but it's not clear if they're near humans or if those are just like decorations now. Because we've gotten a few more of them.
Katooni, my favorite. Yes. Yeah, and I feel like, didn't they sort of do that with Depa for a little bit? Or
yeah, because she was like, what, Chilakten or something like that?
Yeah.
That was also an alien species, and then they changed course with that in the new canon too, I think.
Thankfully. Which I found out the other day when I was doing some of this research that apparently they wanted her back for Attack of the Clones, but they couldn't get the actress, so they got someone else to be Depa, but their new Depa didn't look anything like the original Depa, so they made it a completely new character with a different name. Said they were sisters, but whoa, they don't even have the same last name.
Huh.
Wait, so do you know who the Attack of the Clones character is then?
Give me 1 second. I can figure it out. Cause I hadn't even heard the name, and I was very obsessive about studying the female Jedi that we saw in the prequel trilogy.
I'd never heard this piece of trivia before.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Hey, I'm trying to look at the list of Jedi Council members, but it's not.
So it wasn't someone who was on the council.
Okay.
Deppa was, but there we go. This is on the Wook. Two prominent Chalactans were Jedi Master Deppa Balaba and her sister Sarg Labuda. And there's a picture of a random Jedi. Doesn't even have an outfit like even close to Deppa's, but it says she's Deppa's sister.
Whoa.
And she died on Geonosis.
Huh. The more you know.
Yup. It was, I believe, another Turkish Australian. No, wait. That's who played Deppa, was a Turkish Australian actress. They don't even have. They don't even list an actress for her.
Yeah, I'm looking at the same entry. I don't see anyone on here either.
Huh. Star Wars is whack, y'all.
Especially, in, I guess, in that prequel era, too, when they were just switching characters back and forth and not doing, like, the background stuff. Like, they had that whole thing where they had the fans come up with, like, backstories for characters and stuff. So a lot of this stuff was just, like, was not being established at the time, I guess.
Oh, that's right. There's that one, Sarissa Jang or something like that. That one white woman with all the hair, the braided hair and all in Attack of the Clones. I don't know. We're digressing super hard. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about the tendency to turn them into aliens and whether or not you think there's a difference between what they've done with characters like Barriss and Adi and Luminara and then let's just use Lupita Nyong'o as Maz as a counterbalance to that or counterexample.
I mean, it's weird because, like, you know, you had Mace Windu as a man of color in Attack of the Clones and the Phantom Menace, and he's human, right? He's just from a different planet, but he's human. And yet the women of color get turned into aliens for no discernible reason. And I don't. It's strange to me, and I guess I don't know what I think about that in comparison with, like, the alien, like, the direct aliens like Lupita Nyong'o's character.
Heck, we could even count the Twi'leks in Jabba's palace.
Yeah. I think a part of this also stems a little bit from throughout the 80s and a lot of the 90s, there was sort of this thing in science fiction where aliens were considered an acceptable substitute for diversity. And I think that bled its way into especially these prequel films a little bit.
Yeah. Would you guys, this is probably an easy question, but would you have preferred it if we had seen them as human characters?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you brought up the thing with Lupita Nyong'o as Maz. I don't know why, but that one feels a touch different to me. I don't know if Lupita Nyong'o signs on for Star Wars if she's not doing a mocap role.
And I mean, I think she did say that what attracted her to the part was that it was going to be like CGI and mocap.
Yeah. And really, I was kind of stunned with her voice work on that, but that's neither here nor there. That's kind of a case where it really is that CGI work was a different kind of acting for her that I can see why that there was the appeal there. There was really no reason to make these other characters we've mentioned aliens. I don't know really what was to be gained by doing that because there are plenty of other places to feature aliens in these films and they don't have to come at the expense of actually putting women of color on screen as themselves.
And it's not like the prequels were lacking in aliens either. Like,
yeah,
there were plenty of them and we just had a bunch of honestly background characters, right? None of them had speaking lines in the film and they still turn them into aliens anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it does feel like that was disproportionately done with women of color.
Definitely. I have to agree with you there. But in the meantime, I guess this gives us an excuse to sort of claim Barriss for the purposes of this podcast.
Works for me.
Yeah. Jay, do you happen to know who her voice actress is in Clone Wars?
I don't. Okay. But I can check really quickly.
I just figured if anyone knew it off the top of their head, it was going to be you.
Fair.
Meredith Salinger.
Huh.
Hmm. Is she white or a person of color?
She is white.
Okay.
And I know she had a very British accent in the show.
She did?
Oh, yeah.
That didn't sound British to me.
Both her and Luminara were, like, pretty British. At least that's what I thought.
Huh. I didn't rate it as British when I watched last night. Interesting. Okay. So actually, I kind of want to, we'll go into the whole coding thing, but I'm going to go into that a little bit later. We start talking about the Clone Wars. Because there's kind of two versions of Barriss when you come to Star Wars. And I think it affects her more than it does a lot of characters who aren't the main leads or main characters in the films. You have the Legends version of Barriss, and then you have the canon version of Barriss. So let's touch the first one first, shall we? The happier one, even, I think is what I meant to say. So in Legends, we got to see her primarily in three different books. She was in The Approaching Storm by Alan Dean Foster, which took place. It was the immediate prequel to Attack of the Clones. It's that reference to the, oh, yes, Obi-Wan and Anakin. They just got back from mission on Ancyon, a border dispute or something like that. So it was Barriss and Luminara, Obi-Wan and Anakin on there. And to be honest, I don't remember the book entirely well. But it did. There was a lot where you saw like her insecurities, and there were a lot of comparisons between her and Anakin. Do either of you guys remember that book very well, or has it been?
It's been so long since I've read it. I've only got the vaguest recollections of it.
Yeah, and I actually never read it myself.
Oh, okay. At which point, I'm just going to mention the one thing that I really liked in the book was that, number one, it established her as being a healer, and that was her big skill as a Jedi. At one point, she wins the trust of her captors by healing. And then another point, which this is worth Googling at some point just to see all of it, they have to demonstrate their soul. So Anakin actually sings a Tatooine slave song. And then Luminara sort of does all these really cool acrobatics with her lightsabers that were almost sort of like dancing. And I thought that was a neat thing to see. And you get to see that side of the character. Then, of course, she's in Attack of the Clones in the background of a couple scenes that always make me go, yay, there's my girl. And then she's at the Battle of Geonosis, which obviously kicks off the Clone Wars. And then we get to the MedStar books. Which
Mash
all of us have
space.
Read.
Yes.
Yes. Did anyone get a chance to refresh themselves on these a little bit?
I started the first MedStar book. I wasn't able to finish it in time, but it did give me a little chance to familiarize with how Barriss was written in these books. And my first time reading it since I've watched MASH, so I actually got the references now.
Do either one of you want to take explaining it then? Because I never watched MASH.
Jay, I'll let you.
Sure. So MASH, the acronym stands for Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, and it's a 1980s TV show that was set during the Korean War, and it was about doctors healing soldiers, American soldiers and Korean civilians and allied soldiers during the war, and it was sort of a mix of drama and comedy. And the MedStar books take place at a place it's on a planet, and it's a very low-tech planet because of the local planetary conditions. And it's at a Republic Mobile Surgical Hospital, and they call it a RIMSU as a sort of direct reference to MASH. And several of the characters sort of channel the same quick banter and you know, good humor under stress situations that you see in MASH, as well as the fact that they have to do quick and dirty surgery to get a lot of soldiers up and running. And there are constantly waves and waves of prisoners that have to come, or prisoners of wounded soldiers that have to come in and be treated over and over again. And that's sort of the MASH vibe in a nutshell. And it's the MedStar vibe as well.
Brian, was there something you wanted to add, or
that pretty much sums it up and why the books are really enjoyable?
Yeah. So what did you guys, I mean, I know for me that these books were probably why I liked Barriss. It's set 2 years into the Clone Wars, and it sort of serves as her Jedi trial. And we get to see her, like, we don't just get to hear about her being a healer, but we get to see her doing it and her compassion for others as she has to resist the call to the dark side when presented with a tricky situation.
I mean, I really liked her appearances in Legends because the whole Jedi healer aspect was such a nice contrast to the generic Jedi warrior that we got from pretty much every other Jedi. And it was just a nice counterpoint to the rest of the Order we were seeing at that time.
Yeah, the things I liked about Barriss in this book is that it showed you sort of the empathic side of the Jedi. She was thinking of others. She was talking about her training at the academy to learn other cultures and appreciate them, and her own uncertainty at being a Padawan and trying to become a knight was sort of a good foil to Anakin, which I guess ties in well to the approaching storm, because she's not sure if she's worthy, not sure if she's going to be able to pass the test. She really wants to, but she's a lot more humble and aware of her limitations than Anakin, but equally as, you know, interested in driving forward and passing those trials.
Yeah, and I always like it when you get to see a Jedi interact with non-Jedi characters. Especially when it's in a situation like this, and it's not like in post Return of the Jedi where, yeah, you have a Jedi with a whole bunch of non-Jedi, but they're usually someone who didn't grow up with the Force, like Qornhorn hanging out. Yeah, he's a Jedi, but also he was a pilot and Corsec first. Whereas in this situation, you have someone who's only ever known the Jedi way of life and how she contrasts with the other doctors.
Yeah, and I mean, that contrast was also very interesting because they played a lot in how the doctors, you know, this is Star Wars, so it's like, you know, they have good technology and they're doing their medical readouts, and sometimes they can't tell what's wrong with a person. And the books actually went in the sort of the psychologically damaging and traumatizing parts of war, which is something that Barriss as a Jedi could actually get into and help people with, which the doctors maybe were not the most skilled at doing.
Yeah, I was able to flip through like the first 25 or so pages before I realized I just didn't have the time. And I noticed that there's some parts of these books that really did not age well, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
The one doctor, what's the one lead one? The one from the weirdest Corellia ever. He's got some very 90s, early 2000s. Yes. Oh, I was like, oh, honey, please stop talking about what she looks like under the robes.
They may have leaned into the MASH homage a little too much there.
Yeah.
He seemed like he was based on Hawkeye, who was sort of famous for womanizing and hitting on nurses, and doesn't come across so well today.
Yeah, I mean, that didn't age well in MASH either.
You gotta love the media that we adored in our youth that just, yeah. Yeah. But I would still say that those books they're worth a read, especially if you're interested in the war side of things. Because again, it's a point of view on the Clone Wars that kind of gets a little bit more into the gritty reality of it. Even though I know gritty is kind of like a dirty word now, but it gets into how awful it is.
And one of the strengths, I guess, is because it's so isolated in this, you know, one planet, it doesn't really matter that it's a Legends book. You can, if you've only read canon books, you can still pretty much get into the book as long as you've, you know, seen the Clone Wars or watched the movies, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, I actually saw when I was looking at her Legends Wikipedia page that they placed this back when they were still trying to keep Clone Wars as part of Legends. They placed it between when she meets Ahsoka and between the end of season 5. You're like, oh yeah, she goes off and does this in the meantime.
Oh, so she's already met Ahsoka when this happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Or that was the timeline they came up with, because this is 2 years in. Which still makes it a bit of a struggle, but it's fine. It's, yeah. Yeah.
It works. So
sorry, go ahead.
It works.
Yeah. Was there anything else you guys wanted to say about Barriss from Legends before we go into canon?
Yeah, again, just that I loved, it was a very unique angle to take with a Jedi.
And just think about her character as an empath and a healer as we move on to our canon discussion.
Dun, dun, dun. And then we get to canon. And I should add, before we go any further, that Barriss was, because of her Legends appearances, was one of my favorite characters for a long time. She looked cool, and we didn't have that many female Jedi, and she was awesome.
And yeah, like her Jedi robe designs are unique. Like, her and Luminara don't wear your generic Jedi robes. They kind of look different and cool.
Yeah, I love their capes. They're really cool capes. But then we get into canon, it's a little bit jarring if you're used to Barriss from Legends, because you first meet her in season 2. It's the second battle of Geonosis. Barriss and Luminara meet up with Ahsoka and Anakin. And then Barriss and Anakin aren't peers anymore, because Barriss and Ahsoka are peers, which threw me for a loop the first time I watched it. And then basically the episodes sort of, you contrast their master Padawan relationships, and you contrast between the differences between the two Padawans, because Barriss is way more uptight than Ahsoka, who is clearly meant to be with Anakin as his Padawan, given their attitudes.
Yeah, it goes into the differences between, you know, both their master's training styles and sort of the leeway they get into, and even how they act as Jedi. Like, Barriss would like pre-plan and study and strategize, and Ahsoka would be more improvisational. I think Filoni even made a joke in one of the special features that when Barriss is cutting a lightsaber hole into some factory, she cuts a square hole instead of a circle, and he joked that maybe it was because she's a bit more square than Ahsoka is.
That's very on the nose. Oh boy.
That's a very Dave line.
It is. Actually, when I was rewatching these episodes last night, I was kind of laughing because Luminara was like, oh yes, I had Barriss memorize like all of the tunnels. And I'm like, when did she have time to like memorize a map? But she did it. And I'm just like, this is very, very blatant. But yeah, so after that is the disgusting Geonosis Brainworms episode.
Ugh.
Ryan, that was you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd managed to forget about those episodes.
Yeah, you want to take this one?
I mean, there were brainworms, and the brainworms caused Barriss and Ahsoka to lose their agency, which is a great frickin' plot device. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Went in. Ahsoka was fine. She managed to not get brainwormed, but the clones in Barriss were.
Right, yeah. That was, I hate plot devices like that.
It's worse than that, to quote Hobby, because, you know, not only is Barriss possessed by brainworms, but, you know, she acts completely out of character because she's, you know, possessed by this Geonosian worm thing, and she's attacking Ahsoka, and her fellow clones are trying to hurt the Republic, and it just... You know, we didn't know this at the time, but it seems like it's setting up other out of character moments that'll happen in the future.
Yeah. And then because I didn't feel like hitting next on the remote, in the episode prior to that, when the brainworm thing gets introduced, Luminara gets captured by the Geonosian Queen, and like they're going to put the brainworm in Luminara, and she's like can you guys not, as Obi-Wan and Anakin are there, and Anakin's like, and Obi-Wan's like, no, listen, we need to, let's just, do you think it's going to go in her ear or her mouth? And he's like delaying for time or something. And I'm just like, Obi-Wan, buddy, do you really want a worm going in your brain? Like, have a little bit of sympathy for this very freaked out Jedi Master.
Oh, Obi-Wan, sometimes you're not Obi-Wan? Not the most tactful.
No. Yeah. Yeah. And then, so fun fact. Okay, so overall, I think, let's draw a line in the sand there, because that's essentially all we see of Barriss in most of the Clone Wars. She's in the episode that follows the Brainworms one, because she's in the room when someone gets, Grievous tortures someone, and she escorts the younglings out, which I want to be like, why were the younglings in the room to see the transmission anyways? But it's fine. And then I think Wikipedia said the only other time we see her is in a couple of flashbacks that are in later episodes. So how do you guys feel about, like, just taking it from away from everything else, how do you feel about Barriss's portrayal in the Clone Wars up to this point?
I mean, up to that point, it was a little jarring, contrasting that to how she was written in Legends. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it, because we just didn't get that much of her.
Yeah, like, I could roll with it in the beginning, because I think, you know, Barriss had a unique character in Legends, and I think that she was turned a little more generic, a little more of a plot device in the Clone Wars, in the sense that, oh, she was your straight-laced normal Jedi to contrast with Ahsoka. But I could buy that if, you know, the idea was for her and Ahsoka to be, you know, contrasts and friends and stuff like that. So up to the end of the show, that was okay, if just different to get used to.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't a deal breaker.
Yeah, I really missed the healer aspect, because I thought that helped make her stand out a little bit. And I thought we got some nuance to her in Legends that we didn't quite get in the Clone Wars episodes, which I partially chalked up to we're not in her head. And it is a kid show, technically. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But I didn't mind it. Like, it was fine.
It was mostly just there.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I expected her to be in the show a lot more than she was, because, you know, established female Jedi with a female master, and maybe you want to, if you're having Ahsoka be the star of your show, have a few more female characters in there.
Especially one that's around the same age as Ahsoka. You would have thought that Barriss essentially being the same age would have meant that we would have seen her on screen with Ahsoka more.
Especially since, even with the limited two episodes we got with the two of them together, they worked really well together in just that little time. So if they'd done just a little more, it would have been great.
Yeah, I mean, it was a promising setup that just never went anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we reach the part of the episode where anger. And then the last couple episodes of season 5 happened, which I believe most people remember as when Ahsoka was framed for an attack on the Jedi Temple, and she was put on trial and removed from the Jedi Order, and then it was proven that it wasn't her and someone had set her up, and she decided to leave the Jedi Order anyways. And it turned out it was Barriss?
Just out of nowhere.
Jay, you actually rewatched the episodes, right?
Yeah, well, I focused on the Barriss scenes because I didn't want to go through that whole ordeal as a whole, but what made it even worse for me is that I'd completely forgotten that it's like a 3 or 4 episode arc, and at the beginning of the arc, after the bombing, there's like a dialogue between Barriss and Ahsoka in the temple, and it was sort of in advance digging the knife in a little deeper, because Barris was talking about the war and emotions and how she's, you know, having trouble keeping her emotions under control. And then Ahsoka's just like, oh, betrayal cannot be forgiven. And whoever did this atrocity must be punished. And it's like they're priming us for this conflict between two characters that should be getting along and aren't. And I just sort of resent knowing what they've done to them.
Did they set it up to make it like they had been like really, really close within the episode? You know, they were good friends. And
yes. In fact, Anakin, there's even so Barris doesn't really want to talk and she walks off and Anakin's like, you know, go talk to your friend. And then Barris actually confides in Ahsoka and, you know, asks her for advice and they're, you know, have a real heart to heart. It's like they had this relationship that was not really earned in the show aside from, you know, the two episodes that they worked really well together in.
And this is what makes me mad, because they didn't fucking earn it. Sorry, I guess I got the F-bomb.
They Congrats.
Didn't earn it. And she was a healer, and
her actions in this were so at odds with everything that was presented to us prior, and we were just kind of told to, yeah, just roll with it.
And even her own actions, she like what attacks the Jedi because the Jedi have lost their way because they're fighting a war. It's like she uses death and destruction to prove her point. And at one point, this is one of the most incoherent parts of the whole thing. When Anakin confronts her and figures out that it's her that was behind the bombing, Barris pulls out the two lightsabers of Asajj Ventress and they're red. And she says, I think they suit me. And so you're led to think that, oh, she's turned dark, but then she's not dark. She's actually trying to stop the Jedi. Like, it's completely incoherent. And you just get the impression it was all for shock value. And I can't get away from that.
Yeah. And didn't she, like, she disguised herself. She tried to make people think that she was Ventress at one point, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She, like, framed Ventress. And then Anakin confronts Ventress. And Ventress is like, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And Anakin believes her.
So here's part of what bothers me. And this is going to be my nitpicky, like, this is me trying to not reach total blowing up in anger point. Like, lightsaber styles are very distinctive. Like, Ahsoka does not have the same lightsaber style as Anakin. And a big part of that is because Ahsoka uses two blades. And Asajj Ventress uses two blades. And that makes your fighting style different. And even the two of them use two blades differently. So this show wants me to believe that Barris could just use two unfamiliar lightsabers well enough to almost make people think she's Ventress.
Yeah.
Like, fact, come on.
That's a great point because, like, the show itself, its animation style, you know, part of the way they characterize different characters is by showing their fighting styles. Like, yeah. That's a big part of who they are.
Yeah. Just baffling. Unpopular opinion time. So we all know these episodes for that great last moment in which Ahsoka walks down the steps and the season ends.
Mm-hmm.
That moment for me was kind of wrecked by trying to make sense out of this convoluted mess of everything that preceded it.
Yeah, actually, can one of you guys, because if I do it, I'll just devolve into screaming and swearing. Can one of you read that quote that we have from her when she's on the trial and it's revealed that she's the one who blew up the hangar or whatever it was?
Sure. The quote was, I did it because I've come to realize what many people in the Republic have come to realize, that the Jedi are the ones responsible for this war, that we've lost our way, that we've so lost our way that we have become villains in this conflict, that we are the ones that should be put on trial, all of us. And my attack on the temple was an attack on what the Jedi have become, an army fighting for the dark side, fallen from the light that we once held so dear. This Republic is failing. It's only a matter of time.
I swear to God.
Okay, so I get why, I totally get why she feels that the Jedi have failed and that they are responsible for so much of this. I don't get how her actions line her actions line up with what she just said here.
No, yeah, like why would you attack? Why would you kill more people?
Like
if she was the one that walked away from the Jedi at the end of the episode because she was disillusioned, that would have made perfect sense.
But what if what if this whole arc starts with Ahsoka watching Barriss leave the Jedi Order and someone else is responsible for this bombing thing?
So much better.
Because then you get this bookending thing here, and it's just brilliant and is in line with both characters, and you don't have to twist yourself into pretzels to create this unearned shock value.
And heck, there's even precedent in legends for a Jedi leaving the Order in the middle of the war. I can't remember which book it was in. I want to say it was Yoda Dark Rendezvous, but like there's a Jedi who's like, I'm done. Like, this isn't right. What's happening isn't right. I'm leaving. So they could have done that, and it would have fit.
Yeah, but
it could have fit with Barriss.
Yeah, and imagine Ahsoka turning that over in her head for a couple episodes, wondering why her friend just up and left the Order, until she realizes it's the right thing to do at the end and walks that same path. It would have been great poetic writing.
Yeah, and I still just can't get past that, like, we see Barriss for, I'll be generous, half a dozen episodes. Half a dozen episodes in four and a half seasons. And then we get the, oh, it's such a big betrayal of Ahsoka. Like, no. No.
I don't know if a betrayal actually needs to happen for this plot to work. And it could have been written in a way that didn't derail another female character.
Yep.
There was a little documentary they gave before the episode, and Filoni had said, talking about the reveal, I wonder if by now you guys kind of know who's behind the villainy of this episode. For some of you, it's good. You accept it now and can deal with it. For others, it's going to be a hard Saturday next week. But that's how things go in the Clone Wars. And I can't – this is me now. I can't help but think, like, the shock value thing was engineered, and that they were probably aware that fans were making a lot more of Barriss and Ahsoka's friendship than the show had, and they wanted to deliver a shock to their dedicated fans who liked the two characters.
I mean, of course fans latched onto their friendship more than they did, because there weren't a lot of female friendships in this show.
Yep.
Like, some of the only ones that I could think of that Ahsoka had were with Padme.
Hmm. And, you know, this is where we circle back to something I've been harping on from Star Wars Animation for a while. This is why it's important to get more women writers in your writing room.
Yep. Oh, and on top of that, the whole, oh, it's going to be a hard Saturday next week. So I did not watch the show live because Clone Wars started airing during my little, like, we're taking a break from Star Wars. I blame the Darkness trilogy. But it aired during that time, and I knew kind of what happened, and I'm like, that's stupid. What the heck? And then I rewatched The Clone Wars for Project Fratachi Station. Brian, you remember my reaction, don't you?
Oh,
because
vividly.
We were on a Skype call during that, like right after I watched it.
Yeah, it was ranty. It was sweary.
It was, yeah.
It was passionate.
Yeah. I can't even begin to repeat what I started to say because I used the one F-bomb already, and I think I used about 20 in the space of 2 minutes that day 4 or 5 years ago. But yeah, and I mean, I think what gets me about this is that I don't mind when shows punch me in the gut. Someone earlier was talking to me about what I would want in a video game. And I said, I was like, listen, I like my video games to like punch me in the gut and for it to be like a decision that I made. Essentially talking about things like Mass Effect.
Yeah, where you have agency over it.
Yeah, or even when it's something like Battlefront 2, where horrible, horrible things happen and it hurts, but I still love the game and I love the story. So it's not that I can't take emotional trauma to my characters. This is not...
It's got to be earned, though.
And it wasn't earned. And that's what gets me to this... Like, it's... Four and a half years later, this is what still gets me. And I think I can't decide if it hurts more because, one, it wasn't earned, or two, because they took this character whose defining characteristic in Legends was being a healer.
And made her a murderer.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's even worse than that. Again, I was just looking up some trying to find more commentary on it, and I found an interview from her voice actress in the beginning, and she was sort of describing Barriss's key characteristics as being loyal, wanting to do a good job and to do the right thing. And that's not, and she actually does mention the healer thing, and that's not what happened. That's not what she ended up doing in the show. They went against her fundamental key traits, and they did it maybe because they thought it would be extra shocking coming from her, but that's not how it works.
Yeah, and actually, someone else pointed out something to me on Twitter. Yes, I want to say it was last night. Because in the show, her and Luminara, their outfits are very distinct. And their hair is, you don't see their hair. It's kind of just like their faces and their hands. And someone said that to her, Barriss was a visually Muslim-coded character.
Oh,
who
God.
Commits an act of terror.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's... I hadn't even stopped to consider that. That is so much worse.
Yeah. And now, to be fair, I'm not sure. I will say that I don't believe the person who mentioned this to me on Twitter. I don't think that she's Muslim, and I haven't seen necessarily other people, anyone who's of the Muslim faith, say that they feel this way as well. But when she pointed it out, I went, oh no.
Well, there sure does seem to be some visual coding there, so it is definitely possible to read it that way, and that's not great.
Oh.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Rogue One a little bit, and that's not great either.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's boy, that takes something we already didn't like and made it a whole lot worse.
I didn't think it could be worse, and yet here we are.
Yep.
I honestly don't... Brian, it's like you said before, this is why you need more women in the writer's room and why you need a more culturally diverse writer's room.
Mm-hmm. Because someone could have said something if... Yeah. If they had a more broad group of writers, someone would have said something.
Yeah, and I mean, and in fairness, not everyone's going to always catch everything. I mean, the three of us, who I think are reasonably aware, none of us thought of that particular connection until someone else pointed it out.
Well, which is, again, why it's so important to have more perspectives in your writing room.
And I don't think it was ever done maliciously, but God,
and we have to come back to the thing where it doesn't require intent to cause harm.
Yeah. I try to figure out what part of this I hate the most. And I honestly think it always comes back to the healer thing.
Yeah.
Because the Legends decision hadn't been made at this point. They had maybe just sold. Had they sold to Disney yet?
I think the deal was done in 2012, which is about the time this was airing.
Actually, right? Fun fact, it was today in 2012.
Yeah, 6 years ago today.
Oh my gosh, wow.
I was sitting in a Taco Bell in Moses Lake, Washington.
I was sitting on my bed on my computer when I got texts from you and Nancy. blog.
I was in class totally paying attention and not distracted at all for the rest of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. But point is that when this aired, we thought this was, yeah. And it still is canon. And we don't know what's happened to Barriss. No. Except that she's not the seventh sister. And honestly, at this point, I just kind of hope she died in Order 66 because I don't trust them. I don't know what they could possibly do to her character to make it better.
Yeah, this was a classic case of writers wanting to do something and working their way backwards from there. And that is often a dangerous way to write. Because it can produce these nonsensical plots that we see. It's even worse that they did this with a female character that perhaps has some diverse coding that makes it all the more problematic.
Yeah. Okay. Jay, do you want to go into your art corner before we just ramble and vent about this for another half hour?
Let's do it. So my art corner is talking about an important part of the visual coding of Miri Allen's, which is they are known, at least Barriss and Luminar are known for having those little diamond-shaped tattoos on their face. There's no canon explanation for them as far as I'm aware, but back in Legends, they describe those as being awarded to people who've completed rites of passage or to mark other achievements. And the more of these tattoos you have on your face, the more trials that you've passed. And one thing that I thought was very interesting is that Barriss and Luminara have those tattoos, those cultural markers, even though that they were Jedi and they were brought to the temple as children. And usually part of that is being raised from a young age before you have time to internalize any of these markings. So it's interesting that they've kept their cultural heritage, even though they've been transformed into Jedi, at least in Legends.
Yeah. It does seem to be a pretty standard thing, though, for, like, you know, Deppa still has her Mark of Illumination. She goes back and does that. I feel like there's some other instances where, like, you see them still have these cultural ties.
That's
even
true.
Though,
like, Eddie Galea still has her headdress, if that's still a headdress. Whatever that is.
Seed pods. You know what? I'm going with headdress because I can. Yeah. But yeah, I thought the tattoos were neat, even if they are a true pain to paint on yourself when you're doing the costume. I ended up doing printing out temporary tattoos the last time I did it, and I am sticking with that from now on because it is so much faster.
Yeah, that seems like a less frustrating way to go about that costume.
Takes about 3 minutes instead of about half an hour. It's great. All right. So we did have two questions in this month for Tell That to Kanji Cast, and they're both from Diana. So the first one she asked was, how do you think Barriss' storyline could have been handled in the Clone Wars?
Oh, boy. Anything but what they did.
Yeah, right. I'm still going to stick with what I said a little earlier, where yes, have her scattered throughout the show a little more so we can actually establish that camaraderie between Ahsoka and Barriss more. But at the beginning of that final arc, Barriss walks away in front of Ahsoka. And
I really like that.
That's the conclusion of her arc.
I think she would have been great as a recurring character, not just for the friendship thing, but like if the big part of their relationship was to show how they were a different kind of Jedi and what they could learn from each other, it would be cool to see them touching base every so often, being able to compare and contrast and continue learning from each other. And that would be part of both of their arcs so they can really sort of reflect on each other going forward throughout the show. So it's not just that Ahsoka is defined by her relationship to Anakin and Obi-Wan, but she has someone else to bounce things from.
Yeah, and I would have really, I mean, I just love that Jedi healer aspect. I thought it made her very distinct as a character, and I loved how she struggled with trying to always to do the right thing. I thought it made her seem, for lack of a better term, very human. But I really like Brian's pitch. I think we're all agreed on this. She should have been in there more often and have been a recurring character. But I would have liked if, you know, when she walks away from the Jedi Order, she goes and just sort of devotes her life to trying to help people as a healer, find some planet where she just goes in and does what she can and doesn't really want to get caught in the middle of the fight.
I could totally see her traversing the galaxy, just this freelance healer just shows up, does her work, and then leaves.
And doesn't care what side of the fight you are on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can you imagine if they had done that? And then, because right now the Vader comic has been Vader hunting down different Jedi. And eventually him coming for her.
Ooh.
And her being like, yeah. Oh, man.
Missed potential.
Yeah.
I like our headcanon a lot more than what we got.
I'm going to stick with it from now on. Okay. So the other question Diana asked us was, on a scale of 1 to 10, how great are the MedStar books? I'm going to give them a 7. 7.5, maybe.
You know, I'm going to give them a solid 8. Parts of it haven't aged well, like we mentioned earlier, but it's a slice of Star Wars that doesn't get written very often, and I find value in those.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with the VII in Roman numerals.
Oh my God, Jay.
I had to. Just because, you know, they're really fun. They're a great read. Parts of them feel a little, you know, you occasionally get the too much spacey words that the EU was afflicted with. So they do come across as being of their age, but they're still
your usual legends caveats apply.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'll go with a solid 7.5 then. Because with one major exception, the books that they put out, in Legends that were being published while the Clone Wars were quote unquote happening between Episode 2 and Episode 3 are a really solid set of books.
Mm-hmm.
The one with the Helicon, we shall pretend didn't happen, but you had the MedStar books. Shatterpoint is another amazing one.
Dark Rendezvous.
Yeah, that Yoda book's incredible. Sessa's Deception isn't too bad. It's kind of forgettable for me. And Republic Commando books are either you'll love them or you hate them. But I liked that they all really looked at the war in a serious way that the films weren't going to get a chance to.
Yeah.
And then even in a way that I feel like the Clone Wars hasn't and never did.
Yeah, I agree with that. So as far as the MedStar books, they're not the first Legends books I'd recommend if you haven't read Legends before, but they're solid.
Yeah, if you like the Clone Wars and like the prequel era, they're a great recommendation.
Yeah, if you like Twilight Company, this might be
a
good pick.
Yeah, that's a good recommendation. If Twilight Company worked for you, you'd like these books.
Yeah, I mean, the writing's not quite as good as Alex Freed, but yeah. Yeah. All right. Anything else we want to say about Barriss before we wrap this episode up?
I think I'm good.
I think I'm good.
Well, now I can't just say, God damn it, Filoni.
Nothing's stopping you.
It's true. Yeah, Barriss, she's a great character, and Legends did a decent amount with her. They could have done more had they had more freedom within that era, and I just wish that canon hadn't squandered the opportunity that they had with her.
Agreed.
Yeah, I feel like if she were being like, if the prequels occurred in this era and we had this canvas of female Jedi that the prequels gave us, I think people would have made much more use of her in storytelling these days.
We can only hope. But anyways, all right, I think that about wraps it up. Like I said, it's a little bit more of an unusual episode for us since the character isn't, I guess, Asian within the context of the universe, even though, yes, we know there's no Asia in space. We know, don't tell us. But I'm glad we talked about her, kind of gave us a little different spin on the conversation. But hey, next episode in the month of November, which honestly might be December because we had to keep pushing this episode off because my work schedule was hell. We're going to be talking about Captain Cardinal. So your assigned reading to listeners and other people who do this podcast with me.
It's Brian loaded Larson. On my Kindle. It's loaded on my Kindle. I just finished consuming fire. I'm ready to read it.
You should all read Phasma before we reconvene next month. Although, honestly, it's probably going to be the first week of December at this point. I'll be perfectly honest.
Better for me.
Yeah. Okay. So our next episode will be in December. We'll be talking about Captain Cardinal, who, according to the word of God, who in this case is Delilah Dawson, is Hoppa. Just like me and Brian.
Yay.
Yay. So don't forget, if you have any questions for us to answer on a future episode or just want to chime in, you can tweet them to us via the Tasha Station account and just mark them with the KanjiCast hashtag or some notifier.
Okay, I guess we'll take it out then. This episode of the KanjiCast has been brought to you in part by you, our Patreon subscribers. That's patreon.com/TashiStation. The $1 level gets you into the Patreon exclusive Slack channel where we have all sorts of fun and talking about all sorts of various things like Mass Effect 3 and why it hurts us so much. It's true.
So much.
It's true. Okay, on Twitter, you can find us with the handles Tashi Station. You can find Jay with Admiral Jello. You can find Bria with Chaos Bria. I'm Lane Winrie, LaneWinree. We are available on the iTunes with the Tashi Station mega feed, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. So subscribe on there and leave a review if you like the show. You can find our columns and news at TashiStation.net. Thanks for listening. Catch you all next time.